Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 26th of August, 2020, and we have signs everywhere of this so-called K-shaped recovery. Basically, if you're a very strong listed company, if you're a mega cap, if you're wealthy, you are doing well, and especially if you're long the NASDAQ 100, another high close for the session, for the cycle yesterday. And yet, if we look at consumer confidence, the other part of the K, the other right side of the K, hitting actually a new low for the cycle post-COVID. I have that on slide two, where we're seeing the overall surprise was very large. 93 was expected versus the 92.6 in July. It came out at 84.8, and you can see that the majority of that surprise was in the present situation. That present situation on that chart is the orange line, and you can see how high it was, very much associated with the unemployment rate and the sort of the labor market situation. So this suggests we do have significant worries about how confident people feel perhaps in their job. We're seeing this American Airlines announcement of 19,000 employees potentially be laid off by October 1st. But let's go back very briefly to that NASDAQ chart. Peter, we see that we're heading towards sort of the second standard deviation of this very well-defined trend since the around the April timeframe. Is it time to sell?
Thank you for that very loaded question, John Hardy. Now, as I actually put out on Twitter yesterday, I mean, we're just continuing along this same vector, right? So we have the momentum and we have the earnings driving, as you said, the upper part of the K. So if you're a technology company, you're doing well. I think Salesforce is a very great example of that. They were included in the Dow Jones Industrial Average yesterday. It rose 4%, and then it extended its gains in the aftermarket by 8%. On top of that, with a blowout Q2 earnings release, where they simply just smashed the estimates out of the ballpark, and they also raised their fiscal year guidance, which was way ahead of the street consensus. So I think that was again another evidence in this whole camp of investors that are just saying, you know, if you overweight technologies and healthcare stocks, you cannot do anything wrong. And then the flip side of that is the so-called quote-unquote old economy or the capital-intensive industries. You had in the energy sector, for instance, you had ExxonMobil being discarded by one of the major asset managers yesterday because of the climate focus and climate exposure. So I think a lot of these trends will continue until it breaks. And for me, still, as I said in a recent client event, I mean, I think still the game changer is interest rates / inflation. That is the one thing that takes this apart. Obviously, there are pockets of the equity market, which is very, very, very aggressive in terms of valuation and in the speculative field. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But those parts could come off terribly.
I wonder if free thinking here while you're talking there, thinking about what's an optionality play on a Trump victory. Could be something like black energy call options, just out of the money.
Yeah.
A resurgence, a supply shock once we get sort of demand starting to normalize post COVID. Exactly. We ever do get post COVID. It could be an idea.
Very good idea. I mean, call options on Chevron and Exxon.
Even oil majors or even some of the services companies that would be servicing potentially a restart of the shale investment.
Yeah.
Ola, what's going on in oil markets? I mean, we're going to skip around a bit here on the slides and so on, but I mean, it's a pretty pressing matter for oil markets because we've got a little joker of a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, Hurricane Laura, which it now is, has set the agenda this week for the oil market. The result has been shut-ins of production for crude oil, shut-ins from refineries on the coastline. And on slide five, we just insert a small map, just highlighting the current trajectory of the hurricane as it makes landfall in roughly 24 hours' time from now. And we also circled the red square area where a lot of these refinery assets are located. And as we can see, with the line, the sensor has moved to the right. And you know more about this than me, John. As long as we're on the left-hand side of the hurricane, the potential impact is not as bad as if we're on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
So that slight change in trajectory since yesterday has really, I think, prevented crude oil, first of all, to move higher. We've seen on the chart, we broke $43 yesterday. We were banging ahead against that level for more than 2 weeks. We broke above, no fanfare or drum roll. It really only just moved up, and we're just hovering above that level today. So not really much momentum in the oil market. We have seen momentum in gasoline because 3 million barrels of refinery capacity has been shut in around the area for now. this is obviously all temporary. And if we're seeing this line move further and further to the right, as you said, John, 10 miles further to the right is...
Well, I don't know about the number of miles, but it could be a factor of 100 in terms of the damage.
In terms of billions.
50 miles that way versus 50 miles that way.
Exactly.
So it really, really, really depends on the track. And of course, we have to watch that.
So that line really needs to keep an eye on. And that's probably also why we are seeing gasoline after hitting 140 overnight has come lower over the past few hours here. So keep an eye on that line. The further to the right, the further to east it goes, the less the impact, and we could potentially see some profit taking hit the market. Just as a side note, we got the weekly stock report today. Stocks are expected to draw both in crude oil and gasoline, but obviously that would be a sideshow to the hurricane focus. And let me just also just wrap this up by saying we have to remember we got ample supplies of gasoline. We've had the COVID-19 reducing gasoline demand. Stocks are ample, and we are still, motorists are still using something like close to 10% below what they did a year ago. So again, as long as these installation doesn't take a hit, we could return to normality fairly quickly. And based on that trajectory, potentially that could come sooner than we expect.
All right, let's get back to the debate. I just wonder, you know, Peter, you talk about the market just grinding higher. We have I think there's a lot of focus on the speech tomorrow from Fed Chair Powell, sort of teasing the results. I don't know if he's teasing or to what degree he's going to reveal them, but basically giving a very clear indicator what the results are of this comprehensive Fed policy review, and everybody pointing towards the average inflation targeting regime and potentially leaking that to unemployment, I would say is especially interesting, which could actually set up a future massive bind for the Fed and a stagflationary one if the fiscal is stimulating enough, because you could have inflation running hot, let's say heading towards 3-4%, but if the unemployment rate is still very high, then you have stagflation, and the Fed is going to be stuck wondering whether it should raise rates when inflation is starting to run away. But regardless, the interesting thing from all this would be rising rates, and that's what we're seeing a little bit to a degree in the Treasury market. We saw a pretty decent follow through the sell-off yesterday after the prior day saw similarly high yields actually sort of being, some support came in, but then there was weakness again in the Treasury market. On slide 3, you can see the currently most liquid September U.S. Treasury note futures. You can see those are towards the lows of the cycle. That low previously right around the 75 basis point level, these round or a quarter point levels, which can be quite influential. And the major low you see in that brief spike back in early June was right around the 1% level, actually around 96 basis points. So this really is the market, to me, we're keeping an eye on over the Fed to see if the market really believes that the Fed can engineer this policy to mean that the yield curve can steepen and it will allow somehow it's allowing inflation to happen will mean that inflation actually does occur, which to my mind doesn't really happen unless we get the fiscal side on board. The Fed is just sort of putting it out there in their forward guidance that they're going to enable the fiscal policy to generate inflation without responding. But do you agree that if we do see the extension, and we kind of had this discussion before, but let's refresh it, we see the extension of the sell-off and the long end of the curve, higher yields, that's going to eventually impact the equity market?
Yeah, but I think you need a significantly higher interest rate for the real impact. You could see maybe signs in the most negative cash flow generating high tech, high valuation stocks. Those are obviously the most sensitive to the interest rates. But I think the declines in the treasury futures that we saw earlier in August really hit gold the most, and not so much the technology or equities. So I would suggest that the sensitivity is definitely not in favor of gold and silver on a continued rise in the interest rates here. But if we do get above 1% and beyond, then obviously I think there could be some ramifications, but again, in the worst pockets of the equity market.
That's true, Peter, but it obviously also really depends on how the component of that, say 0.75%, how that is, how do we derive that? How much of that is real yields and how much of that is break even?
Yeah.
And what we saw yesterday was actually real yields. They're basically staying around negative 1% while the break evens moved up to 1.75. So if we see real yield or see nominal yields move up because it's driven by break even yields moving higher and real yields staying low, then then obviously that would be a Goldilocks, obviously not a Goldilocks, but that could be supportive for gold, because that's obviously one of the reasons why you hold gold as an inflation hedge.
But we had a discussion yesterday at the trading floor, because we had a big client that wanted to hedge inflation risk. Everyone is talking about inflation, and we talked about tips, obviously, because it hedges your principal, right, by being increased. And then we also talked about gold being in potentially an inflation hedge. But what we saw if you got massive positive real rate increase suddenly, then it would be bad for gold. It would also be bad for the tips, because if the rates suddenly go up, it has very high duration, the tips, it would go down. So you still need, despite potential high valuation in some parts of the equity market, you still need the equity market, because historically I looked at these, you know, correlation, it has a positive correlation to a positive change in the real yield. So you need that to create a balanced portfolio still.
Right? And the other thing down the road is, at what point, if you're talking about yield curve control, how much of the yield curve and where would it be capped if they are going to cap the yield at various points along the curve? So to my mind, looking at how pockets of the market have run away in the speculative bubble, it creates its own financial stability risks. And if they cap that longer rate too low, they risk those bubbles creating a new set of problems that have nothing to do with the rest of the economy. And I think, to my mind, why not just cap maybe the very front couple of years of the curve and let the long end go up a little bit to maybe tamp down a little bit. But
I was actually just about to say that, John, because if you make yield curve control in the front end of the curve, you keep those rates very low. The income stimulus into the economy from that policy is very minimal. Whereas if you lower the 10-year, then you allow the government to increase financing at a very low rate, at a very high duration point. And I think that has a much potentially worse impact on inflation going forward. If it's just in the short curve, you can allow the long end to move more freely.
We'll see what happens. It's very important what the Fed signals. And above all, it's just these events don't always bring new news compared to what's expected. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about what Powell is going to say. The Fed is often extreme pains to avoid surprising the market, especially in the hawkish side. So it's just more that it provides a key event risk point in time for people to take an assessment and decide, okay, we're now on the other side of this event risk. Let's put our risk capital work with this view. So I just think we need to look at how the markets shape up in the wake of this key speech from Powell.
And just to finish it off, John, I mentioned gold earlier. Obviously, we've seen the market drift lower now over the past week. And clearly, the market will be keeping an eye on this treasury prices here. As you can see on the chart there, slide 3, it's the 139 area. If we start to break lower through that, then potentially the 900 level in 1900 level in gold could be at risk to the downside.
Right, that's a big one on gold, on the gold chart. Very briefly on FX, we're still just, the dollar charts are just coiling and coiling and coiling. I can't get myself to say anything about them. Let's see where we're closing on a daily basis tomorrow post Fed. And then for the week as well, to see if the dollar, the takeaway is dollar bearish or positive. And then briefly on the ruble, which is quite interesting. We've seen a pickup in oil prices above some points of resistance in places, but the ruble is weaker. This is, of course, linked to the Belarus story we've been talking about, and possibly links to that Belarus story where the protests are widening, is the accusation that the Russian opposition leader Navalny has been poisoned. And this is setting up a potential showdown between Germany and Russia, where Germany would, I think, like to get more critical, but is somewhat over a barrel because of their imports of Russian natural gas. But I think that's why we're seeing dollar ruble certainly higher this morning, despite the solid pickup in oil prices.
So Germany needs to strike a deal with Turkey very fast to get that nuke gas pipeline from Israel all the way along.
Whatever needs to happen, it's a very difficult position. And there was one article I was reading this morning suggesting that, I believe it was on Bloomberg, suggesting that Putin feels a little bit emboldened by not having to react much to these requests from the Merkel side, because everyone's distracted with COVID and Merkel is sort of on her way out anyway in Germany. But it's certainly one to watch. A big risk for Russia if there is an attempt to do sanctions or reduce natural gas usage by whatever means, et cetera. I've got a couple of things on the election, but Peter, I wanted you to bring in this very interesting Ant Group IPO and what it's doing for Alibaba stock.
Yeah, so they Ant Group was formerly Ant Financial, is in a big payment and money management platform in China that allows a lot of consumers to make cash savings and get a little bit of interest on that on the Ant Group platform, but also make payments. It was started in 2014 in October, so in only less than 6 years have gone from zero to a $225 billion valuation. I think it's the fastest and most aggressive wealth creation ever recorded in history. And it's 33% owned by Alibaba. And as you saw yesterday, you can see that on the slide six on the price chart, which is a considerable jump in the Alibaba shares on that news. And they are looking to float around 10 to 15% of the shares, which means the offering will be around 30 billion. Previous listeners to me on IPOs will know that I just make a very clear distinction between in the offering. So that I think it's one thing to sell existing shares to the public, or you're issuing new shares. And as I understand the Ant Group IPO here, they are only offering existing shares. They don't need the financing. It's hugely profitable. I think they're running a profit margin very close to 35%. So it's an amazing money machine, basically. We'll have to follow this one, and it will be listed in Shanghai and in Hong Kong. So it's taking a very nationalistic approach here. They're definitely deferring, not going for a US listing as Alibaba once did years back. So it's just another sign of China and the US also in the capital market integration is just pulling apart, basically. Very interesting to follow. And staying with China, another equity story here is NIO. So NIO was up 20% yesterday on zero news. So underscores this speculative fever in EV stocks. It's close to $18. Keep in mind, it traded
$2.50. $2.50 in there, early Q2. Wow.
Yeah, around March, April, right? It traded $2.50. NIO is really just this is one of those pockets I talked to you about. I think this pocket is very, very, very sensitive to interest rates, and we will see the reaction first in this segment because it's capital intensive, and they have high valuations. But the reason why I also put up NIO here is that it shows you the speculative fever. I wouldn't put a warning out here. I think if you have gains over the past couple of months in NIO, please take your gains. I mean, you have got years worth of gains in a few months. It's always important to recognize that this cannot
at least reduce.
Yeah. And it's also a lead-in to me to do a little bit of marketing. We have a battery energy storage research piece coming out today on analysis.sec. So,
what you're saying is a bit hard to get sort of specific exposure to the battery segment.
Very, very difficult. I have some interesting statistics on the Panasonic, et cetera, that shows you that how complicated it actually is.
Yeah, and then you've got some interesting action in the Apple stock yesterday after this recent, very interesting episode where Epic Games is trying to basically accuse Apple of running the monopoly over its iTunes store, I guess, and how it deals with getting revenue through Apple's platform.
Exactly, and we had the first court ruling in the Apple's case versus Epic Games. Remember this whole debacle over the game of Fortnite, and Epic Games were trying to undercut and not pay the 30% cut to Apple, so they created a discount model, and Fortnite was then kicked off. Out of the App Store, and the same went for Google's Play Store. And we got the first court ruling. There was no one really won that first court case here, or the first ruling. Epic Games is allowed to provide the Unreal Engine to other app developers, but they are also saying in the court case that they're losing a lot of developers because of this. So they're saying the whole gaming industry is being impacted, and Microsoft is also now coming in support for Epic against Apple, that Apple is potentially hurting the overall gaming industry by doing these things. And the court said Epic Games is allowed to still provide the Unreal game engine, but there was no definitive ruling on the whole pricing structure, and Apple is still allowed to push Fortnite out of the App Store. Before we just go to the politics side, John, also, I want to mention that news came out yesterday that Unity, which is a big gaming development platform, which has almost 1.5 billion developers on it, on the games developed on the Unity platform, is filing for IPO. And Unity is actually an interesting story because it came out of a basement here in Denmark. They obviously have massive research and development units in the United States. I probably run more like a US company these days, but still have operations in Denmark as well. And that company is definitely now seeking the moment against Epic Games here.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's have a look at the calendar. The Republican National Convention ongoing. We had Pompeo out speaking last night. That wraps up today and tomorrow. Just a brief note, I've been a little bit surprised looking and drilling down a little bit in the polls. So you get these ideas that the national polling is showing a very strong a Biden, tilt in favor of a Biden victory. But if you look down at the state level where this race is decided, in other words, those key battleground states which tilt the Electoral College vote the one way or the other that determines the outcome and determined why Trump won the election in 2016 despite losing the popular vote, it was real clear politics that charting where Trump is now versus the 2016 cycle in key battleground states, six of them, so Florida, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Michigan, and North Carolina. And actually, except for Florida, Trump's margin in the polls, he is behind, but he's behind by less than he was in 2016 at this point against Clinton. So I'm beginning to tilt away from my certainty that Biden will win, and a little bit less certain in the outcome here. We'll be very closely watching the polls after this Republican National Convention, and as we get post Labor Day, the final sprint into the election. And that post Labor Day period is very short this year because of the oddities of the calendar cycle this time around. Specifically for the calendar, the thing I really want to pull out today, as Ola mentioned, the weekly crude oil and inventories from the U.S. Department of Energy, durable goods orders numbers from the U.S., and it's really all about tomorrow's speech from Powell and what it sparks across the board, especially keep an eye on interest rates. We'll talk more about it tomorrow, but interest rates, I believe the speech is at 13:10 GMT. We'll refresh that tomorrow. Interest rates, risk on, risk off, and the dollar. Everything's going to be moving in the wake of this speech as people move to potentially put on a bit more risk and a bit more positioning in what's been a pretty quiet and grinding market of late. For now, we'll call it a day, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.